You are listening to the Truth Frequency Radio Network.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
Hello, 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 and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I never seem to be late for a show on the first Wednesday of the month. I'm going to be just quiet for just a second. I'm not sure if you guys can hear. But today, yes, is tornado alarm testing day, apparently, at the J.D. Moore compound. So, yeah, I hope you guys aren't too annoyed by that in the background. I always forget that I like to do that right at the beginning of the show. Good times, good times. Anyway, my name's JD. We are live right now. Thank you guys all for tuning in. Today is the first day of April, 2015. Obviously, we don't have any April Fool's jokes to play on any of you guys out there today. It's not really a, is it a holiday? I don't even know. I don't know what you want to call it. A celebration of mischief, I guess. I do want to encourage though, the celebration of mischief. My roommate spends all of his time at his girlfriend's house, so he's not here, so I was not able to, really pull off any pranks today. But I do recommend, to anybody listening out there, a very liberal use today of saran wrap in whatever way, shape, or form you find it the most humorous. I always go for the across the top of the toilet. Seems to be pretty funny. And the door frame technique seems to be pretty good too. I always, I want to encourage you guys, you know, have some fun today. Make some mischief. But then also try and film it and put it on YouTube and send it to me. Thanks. Hope you guys are doing well out there. Again, waiting for the tornado alarms to chill out. Today is going to be an awesome show. I hope you guys are geared up for this one. Might be a little challenging for some, should be rewarding for most, and I think it's going to be interesting for everybody. We're going to be talking to a pair of authors today, Henry Vinson and Nick Bryant. They have written, co-authored a book called Confessions of a DC Madam, and I'm sure a lot of you guys out there have heard that name before, the DC Madam, but this is not a story that you've heard before. And I got to say, too, before they come on the show, so you guys don't think that I'm just blowing smoke up their bottoms here, this book is a triumph, ladies and gentlemen. Absolutely, from cover to cover, is absolutely fantastic. it's a really brave story that Henry decided to tell, and Nick did a great job of pulling all the pieces together. I'm not going to go into kind of what it's about right now. We'll wait until they join us on the program, but I promise you guys, what we're basically talking about is some of the politics of sex, lies, and blackmail that goes on in Washington, D.C. and has been going on for a long time. This story does correlate, especially as the pivot point through Nick, with a lot of other stories that have come out recently about the pedophilia rings, both in the United States and in Britain. But again, Confessions of a DC Madam, you can get it on Amazon and I believe at Barnes & Noble as well. Absolute triumph book, ladies and gentlemen. This is going to be a really great show. So I do want you guys to stick around for that. Obviously, that happens in the second hour of the broadcast every day. Give you guys a heads up tomorrow. Servando Gonzalez will be joining us. He's written a lot of books and done a lot of lecturing on the elite, on the Council on Foreign Relations, things like that. Basically, going to be a continuation of our stories regarding the adversaries that are surrounding us all the time and the evil that does exist in the world. He's done a great job breaking this down in a few books, and so another author tomorrow, very excited about. And then it's going to be a week of authors, ladies and gentlemen, because we are going to have Xavier Hayes joining us again on Friday. I'm really excited. I'm hoping that his connection is better this time, because I know we had a lot of people tuning in to the broadcast that day so that they could hear him. And I told you guys yesterday, his book has obviously already ascended to my auxiliary bathroom library, which means it's something I like to read more than once. I got to tell you, too, this Confessions book is probably going to be up there if I don't actually give it away as a gift, because it is just that good, ladies and gentlemen. So again, Henry Vinson and Nick Bryant will be joining us in about an hour. We've got Servando Gonzalez on tomorrow. Xavier Hayes will be on Friday. And then Friday night, the Woo Crew is going to happen again. I get to be on the Woo Crew. I'm so excited about being on the Woo Crew, man. It's so much fun. I love hanging out here with the other hosts. Speaking of, I don't see Kevin in the chat room yet, but hopefully he'll pop in to clarify this for everybody. But I do believe, I've got it on fairly good authority, that James Perloff is going to be on Kev Baker's show this afternoon. James Perloff has written a lot of books. We've had him on to talk about Darwinism. We've had him on extensively to talk about his book, Truth is a Lonely Warrior. I mean, there's probably not a guy out in the world that knows more about false flags than James Perloff from a historical perspective, from an economic perspective. The guy is just all over it. And, you know, one of my big thrills in life is to get to listen to, I'll tell you what, I do not understand. I was listening to Kev's show yesterday. I don't understand where these guys, Kev and Marty, get their news from, because I'm sitting here all day going over news, and I always learn something on their show. They always break some kind of thing that I'm always sitting in the chat room just going, what? Where? How did you guys find this and scoop me on it in the afternoon? I don't understand it. I don't understand it. But I always learn something from those guys and just cannot tell you how much I appreciate their interview style, and I'm really looking forward to see what kind of details they can get out of James Perloff tonight. So do tune in for that. I also want to recommend, if you did not hear Popeye's show last night, oh my gosh, talk about good stuff, ladies and gentlemen. He was talking about the JFK assassinations and kind of going through some of his past interviews with some very prominent people. Absolutely amazing. So I'd highly recommend. I think he's doing a follow-up show on that one tomorrow night too, because I think Joe and him rotate shows. I still don't understand how the schedule here works, guys. I'm just hanging on by the seat of my pants. But anyway, Popeye did a fantastic show on JFK last night. It was 2 hours. I highly recommend you guys download that. Make sure you guys are supporting these other hosts and continuing to support the network as well. Okay. That's everything I got on my list to ramble about this morning, and I want to jump into the international news. Obviously, if you guys are new listeners out there, I see some new faces in the chat room this morning, so everybody play nice in there. It's very cool that Chris and Cherie have given us this forum to have discussions amongst ourselves, listen to the show collectively, and also be able to steward questions to our guests, or if you have comments about the news, or if I'm missing something about a news article, love having you guys in there. But again, for new listeners, if you guys go to redpillreports.com, right at the top of the page is the show section. You'll always be able to find out everything you want to know about the guests, or guests in today's case, as it were, and also see all the news that we aggregate from around the world. You may also notice that I ramble a little bit in the morning, so I never ever seem to get to all the news that we find important, but we have set that page up there so that it is kind of a one-stop shopping source for your daily dose of deprogramming, which is what we hope to do here at the Red Pill Reports. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about Iran and the six major world powers. They did manage, apparently breaking just last night, to reach a preliminary agreement on quote-unquote all the key aspects of a deal over Tehran's controversial nuclear program. So obviously we have been talking about this ad nauseum for days and days and days. Yesterday there was a lot of speculation they were going to kick this can down the road into June. So obviously they went well past the midnight hour. Last night, the 31st, obviously was the deadline for these people to come to some kind of conclusion here. And so Russia came out very late last night / early this morning and said they have now come to a preliminary agreement, but the can did get kicked, though. We are still kicking the can down the road to June because they haven't put any of this stuff in writing yet. They were working feverishly this morning to get all of this draft document stuff in order, but they are going to be kicking the can down the road on the quote-unquote technical details of the final deal. So we have reached some kind of conclusion. Is it the pressure that was being, put on the scene by Israel, or was it the pressure that was put on the scene by Russia acknowledging that they were going to back? Yes, BB is absolutely freaking out. Yes, James in the chat room called that one correctly. But again, you know, you wonder where the pressure is coming from. And then, you know, we've had the story also earlier this week, I believe, where Netanyahu essentially coming out and saying they don't really care what kind of a deal happens between the P5 plus one countries and Iran. They're not going to abide by it anyway. So it's just going to be interesting to see what's coming out. But it does look like this diplomacy is at least moving forward here. So I do like to see that. And again, this kind of broke late last night, early this morning, that they have reached some kind of preliminary deal. let's see if there's any other details that I, no, not really. We've already gone over all the details, right? We know what they want. They're trying to limit the amount of centrifuges that Iran can operate, and Iran basically wanted 10,000. They've pulled it back to 6,000, and they also want to have 400 or so that are operating underground in a bunker, which is kind of where everybody's getting a little like, meh, that seems a little suspicious, which I kind of agree with, but, you know, at the same time, how do you know exactly what's going on over in between Iran and Israel, especially with the wire leaks that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, indicating that Israel was giving bad information to the nuclear inspectors during the entire 12-year sanctioning program against Iran. So again, you just don't know. We don't know what's going on. We don't know what's going on. But at least Tehran seems to be moving forward a little bit here. So that's maybe a good news. But again, this is also breaking from Russia. So Russia now obviously becoming more and more of a key ally with Iran. You know, just keep that you got to keep that perspective in mind as we're talking about these stories of who's actually reporting the news. And again, that came out of RT. Okay. Also, we were talking quite a bit about Yemen recently, the demise of Yemen, as it were. So regional rivals Saudi Arabia and Iran traded accusations again yesterday over the escalating conflict in Yemen, which the UN rights chief warned was on the brink of total collapse. And now aid groups, a warning of a humanitarian crisis, obviously unfolding with sea and air blockades, making it impossible to send desperately needed medical assistance, and casualties there starting to mount. And the heaviest raids yet of the six-day Saudi-led air war against the Shiite Houthi rebels. Explosions lit up the skies over Sana'a on Monday night and rocked other parts of the country on Tuesday. Amnesty International accused Saudi-led coalition of turning a blind eye to civilian deaths, as it reported four children were among six burned to death in strikes on IBB in central Yemen. Rough. But the spokesman for the Saudi-led coalition says it does not intend to kill civilians. We've heard that line before, even though the Houthis had moved fighters into villages. So again, the Houthis moving their stuff into villages, or at least are being accused of doing that by Saudi Arabia. So Saudi Arabia is saying, we take a lot of care, hoping that we're not going to have a lot of collateral damage. Sounds very similar to the rhetoric coming out of Israel during the Gaza war earlier last year. So anyway, the UN Children's Fund says that at least 62 children have been killed so far and 30 others injured during the fighting in Yemen over the last week. On Tuesday, so just yesterday, airstrikes targeted two Houthi-held camps and guard soldiers in the southern town of Dela, a guard air base in the southwestern city of Taiz, and the Houthi stronghold of Damar in south Sana'a. On the ground, deadly clashes have broken out between rebels and tribes, militiamen, and residents who oppose their power grab. And Doctors Without Borders said that it has received more than 550 patients in the southern city of Aden since March 19th as a result of the fighting. The UN said since last Friday, at least 93 civilians have been killed and 364 injured. A spokesman for the European Union Foreign Policy, the chief Federica Mogherini, said the conflict was having terrible consequences for the civilians. And he went on to say that we call on all parties to the conflict to ensure the protection of civilians, that civilian infrastructure is not directly targeted. And the International Committee of the Red Cross says it was trying to negotiate safe arrival of a plane stocked with medical supplies to treat up to 1,000 people. And trading blame for the escalation, Saudi Foreign Minister Prince Saud Al-Faisal charged that the Houthi rebels and their ally Salah had decided with the support of Iran to destabilize Yemen. So Tehran hit back, accusing Riyadh of jeopardizing the entire Middle East. So again, Yemen spinning wildly out of control. We're obviously arming and providing intelligence support for the Saudis as this Saudi-led strike against Houthi Shiite rebels in Yemen continues. It's just kind of ridiculous given the fact that we're supporting said Shiite Iranians in Iraq right now against ISIS. So, I mean, put that in your head and try and figure it out, because I just can't. Okay, more news kind of coming out of Israel. Not necessarily sure if this is entirely accurate or not, or whether it will result in anything, but it is, notable, worth mentioning here. Individuals purporting to belong to the hacking group Anonymous have now released a video threatening Israel with an electronic holocaust for the country's alleged crimes in the Palestinian territories. They say, we will erase you from cyberspace as we have every year. The 7th of April, 2015 will be an electronic holocaust. This is, again, the group said this in a video posted online yesterday. Our message to the foolish Benjamin Netanyahu and all leaders of the Zionist entities, as promised in previous attacks, we will continue to electronically attack all people of the until all people of Palestine are free. And the hackers warn, as shown in previous attacks, we will continue to invade and attack your devices, websites, and personal data. So again, the hacking group Anonymous now coming out with a new video saying that there will be an electronic holocaust carried out against Israel on the 7th, which is the anniversary of the Holocaust, apparently. So there you go. That's what's going on there. I don't know if it's going to result in anything. They've always reported that last year, well, they reported last year on April 7th, that they tried to do this and they only actually brought down a couple of websites for a few minutes. So I don't know. We'll see if anything happens there. I got a follow-up story with this Istanbul situation that was unfolding yesterday during the show. There's a hostage situation. Essentially got resolved in a pretty bad way yesterday. So the prominent Turkish prosecutor was taken hostage by the far-left organization on Tuesday. He did die in the hospital after the gunfire-filled storming of an Istanbul court in which his captors were also killed. According to the chief of police there, he goes on to say that we negotiated with the terrorists for 6 hours but began to storm when we heard gunshots from the prosecutor's office. Erdogan, who is obviously the president there, who's on visit to Romania, said that the prosecutor, Mehmet Salim Kiraz, suffered 5 gunshot wounds and promised to upgrade the security protection for state officials. It is unclear if Kiraz was shot by the captors or the incoming security agents. Eyewitnesses told the media that the storm began when a series of flashbangs followed by a hail of bullets on the 6th floor where the hostage was held. An ambulance then approached and rapidly sped away from the scene. So Kiraz was taken hostage by the Revolutionary People's Liberation Party Front on Tuesday afternoon, and the official gained public notoriety, leading to the case of Berkan Alvin, who was the 15-year-old protester who suffered injuries during the anti-government demonstrations back in 2013. So again... That guy died, that prosecutor there in Turkey. Not good situation there, but to Erdogan saying he is going to, bolster the security for state officials there. I'll tell you right now, man, that would not be a great place to be, Turkey. I just, can't even imagine. Even if you're part of the press, if you're part of anything, it's just, they have been really ratcheting down on the freedom of press and on the people in the streets are just rising up. That's what's going to happen. We're going to see more and more of that going on there. Dozens of terrorists, ISIL terrorists, obviously fleeing from Tikrit, are leaving to Mosul, apparently coming out of Iraq right now. The terrorists of the ISIL organization have fled to Mosul from Tikrit after being liberated by the security forces and the volunteers of public mobilization. Almost 50 pickup trucks full of dozens of terrorists arrived at Mosul fleeing from Tikrit after the security forces and the volunteers of the public mobilization liberated about 70% of its area from the ISIL control. And they added that many of the terrorists were injured and taken to the hospital to receive medical care. So there you go. The ISIL terrorists are also putting out a public plea for blood donations to help some of their injured members. So maybe if you guys are over there and want to donate blood to ISIL, you know, there you go. Russian President Vladimir Putin, he has agreed to extend Ukraine's gas discount until the end of June after a request from Gazprom on Monday. So the discount on Russian gas supplies to the Ukraine in the second quarter of 2015 will be equal to that of the first quarter, according to the Russian's presidential press secretary, Dmitry Peskov. He has stated that the package is being prolonged for 3 months without changes. In the first quarter, Ukraine secured a discount on Russian natural gas equal to the export duty rate, but not more than $100 per 1,000 cubic meters. Earlier, the head of Gazprom said the company had asked the Russian government for a 3-month extension to the discount on gas for Ukraine. And after meeting with the president, Prime Minister Medvedev said lower export duties are not favorable for the Russian budget, but taking into account Ukraine's difficult economic situation, Gazprom's and Ukraine's request could be supported, provided the basic terms of the contract between Gazprom and Naftogaz are adhered to, including paying back all the debts accumulated so far. So currently, Ukraine owes $2.477 billion in gas already delivered, including some penalties. But I really like that story because here you see Russia saying, you know what, we will absolutely sell you guys gas at a discount as long as you guys agree to pay for the stuff you've got, you know, so far. And we're happy to do that. Even though it's not going to be favorable to us, we're more than happy to do that. That's humanity. I mean, I like that. Even if it is, you know, got its head buried in commerce, it's still humanity. And I kind of dig that. So say what you will about Mr. Putin. I'm still on the fence about him. Speaking of Putin, he may be traveling to New York City to deliver a speech at the opening of the UN General Assembly in September. A Russian newspaper reported this, quoting several sources close to the Kremlin. So Kommersant Daily quoted sources close to the presidential administration saying that President Putin's trip to the United States was already in the preparatory stage. And the newspaper also claimed that a source in the United Nations Secretariat confirmed this as well. However, All of the sources noted that Putin's plans would become more clear only in early August, and they emphasized that everything depends on the international situation. Yes. Thank you, Red. Oh, I love you people in the chat room. I love my listeners. You guys, the listeners at TFR, ladies and gentlemen, are the smartest people on the planet. I'm not just saying that because I haven't even gotten, I only got through three paragraphs. I only got to two keywords. And somebody in the chat room's like, already, oh, freaking out because yes, let's do this whole article again, shall we? President Putin coming to speak to the UN General Assembly in September. In September, the United Nations will hold its 70th General Assembly session with many world leaders expected to participate. Russian President Vladimir Putin addressed the assembly 10 years ago, right? But this time, he will be addressing delegates front row center on the second day of the 2015 World Summit. This will be the 70th General Assembly of the United Nations in New York. And again, happening on the 15th of September. Everything depends on the international situation. UN meeting in September. Coincidentally, when the Pope is coming as well. You guys getting a feeling like things might be happening kind of late August, September-ish? I am. Man, I love you guys out there. This is the best part of my day, hanging out with you guys. Okay. Oh, let's see here. Do we want to talk? We've got UK listeners out there in the chat room, right? I'm going to give you this story here just because it broke yesterday, and I thought this was kind of interesting, although I had not ever heard anything about this. It has to do with the bedroom tax there in the UK. And I won't go through this whole article, but there's a disabled couple right now who were basically left unable to pay their rent due to the bedroom tax, which was, again, something I had never heard of. And it has now inflicted a pretty embarrassing high court defeat on Sandwell Council. So this landmark high court judgment, Sandwell Borough Council's policy of taking disability benefits into account when assessing housing support was considered unlawful and amounted to a breach of Section 29, Section 6 of the Equality Act of 2010 and Article 14 of the European Convention on Human Rights. So according to their lawyer, this could have significant consequences across the country. Again, I'm having a little bit of fuzziness about the whole bedroom tax thing, but it seems like in the UK, if you've got a bedroom that's unused, they charge you tax for that. Is that pretty much the name of the game as far as the bedroom tax go? So this disabled couple essentially was being provided disability benefits, which is something called a DLA, but they're also able to draw from something called a DHP. And essentially what happened was these people were taxed beyond their ability to pay for their home because part of the money that they were getting, which was a discretionary benefit, was counted as their income, even though they were getting it because they were disabled. And because their income outweighed their need for their home with the extra bedroom, they ended up having to sell their home, basically. And so they sued the council and won, and it's been just this big whole debacle. I don't know. Maybe Kev will come on later and break this down for us a little bit more. Again, I don't really understand what the bedroom tax is going on. So Paisley saying, so they tax folks with extra rooms from their rent payment if you're on benefits. That's essentially what's going on. And they basically now have ruled that that's not lawful in the UK. So hopefully that will affect a lot of people's lives in a good way. Anyway, okay, moving on here. We got a few minutes left. Let's get into some national news here right now. By national, I mean the United States, because that's where I'm at, ladies and gentlemen. And I try and cover some UK stories. I know we do have a lot of UK listeners in the afternoon over there, and cannot thank you guys enough. Cannot thank you guys enough. Okay, so the Benghazi panel. We've been talking about Clinton and her wiping of her database or wiping of her server that she was keeping and sending emails through. And there's been a lot of talk about what is going to happen next because of this. So now, as of yesterday, a House panel actually formally requested Hillary Clinton to testify about the private server and email account she used while serving as Secretary of State. So Representative Trey Gowdy, chairman of the Select Committee on Benghazi, sent a request to Clinton's personal attorney, David Kendall, requesting that Clinton appear before the committee no later than May 1st for a transcribed interview about the server and the email. And this request comes after Kendall told Gowdy that the server had been wiped clean and that it would be impossible to recover 30,000 emails Clinton detected or deleted last year. Gowdy, in his request to Kendall, also asked Clinton to reconsider her refusal to turn over the server to a neutral third party, which he called highly unusual, if not unprecedented. In Tuesday's letter, Gowdy warned warned that Clinton's decision not to turn over the server to the House of Representatives as a whole will now need to consider what steps to take next. So again, Gowdy says he wants a neutral party to examine the deleted emails to find out if there is any information related to the September 11, 2012 terrorist attacks in Benghazi, Libya that killed U.S. Ambassador Chris Stevens and three other Americans. The House panel wants to examine the State Department's role before, during, and after the attack. Gowdy noted in the letter that even though Clinton said she deleted the emails, it's technically possible to retrieve them because most likely Clinton is not that smart and all she did was delete them. Deleting them, I'll just stop right there. Clinton, you're a genius. You deleted your emails. You'll never ever find them. Don't even worry about it. Just go ahead and give that server over. They'll never find your emails. Don't even worry about it. Nothing to see here. Right. And what was that lady from the IRS that had all of the entirety of the IRS emails stored in her laptop hard drive? Yeah, I believe that, too. Okay. Well, let's see here. Well, we got about a minute and a half left. We got about 30 seconds left, actually, before we go to this break. So I will hold off on doing a little bit more news. When we come back, I do have some pretty good national stuff to cover, but I also have some very important economic news today and also some really good science and tech stuff. And if I can get to it, I promise I'll try and get in some health stuff too. Also, it's springtime. You might notice that I never ever seem to get past the health news, but we also do have a pretty extensive farm and garden section. And as it is springtime, there's a lot of new stuff. So, definitely go to redpillreports.com, get into the show section and scroll down to the bottom because there's a lot of news in there I never cover. If you're interested in that kind of thing, energy, environment stuff, housing news, all of that kind of stuff is down there. It's just we never seem to get to it. So anyway, we're going to this 3-minute break. When we come back, we got lots more news to cover, and then Henry Benson and Nick Ryan will be joining us in about a half an hour for discussions about the Confessions of a DC Madam, their newest work. Keep it right here, guys. We'll be right back. See you in a second.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at hemp. HopeUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Hangar 18, your TFR Roundtable. Saturdays on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. Thank you guys for being here this morning as well. I just can't tell you guys how much I appreciate you guys hanging out in the chat room. We've got a full crowd in there, 17 people. That's a lot for a morning crew, guys. I've got to tell you, really can't tell you guys how much I appreciate you guys being in there. Okay, jumping back into the news here, I got to give this a little story some coverage here. Ernie Chambers, he's a senator from Nebraska. He made some pretty controversial comments regarding police officers yesterday, but I kind of agree all of them. He said that if he carried a gun, he'd shoot an officer first and then ask questions later. Again, this is a senator from Nebraska. This is an audio recording on KFOR 1240, uncovered Chambers, who represents North Omaha's 11th district and is the only African-American state senator there in Nebraska. And he was comparing the Islamic state militants to law enforcement there. And he said basically that he'd shoot a cop if he had a weapon. He said, I wouldn't go to Syria, I wouldn't go to Iraq, and I don't have any need to go to Afghanistan because local police terrorize residents right here just fine. He says, my ISIS is the police. Nobody from ISIS has ever terrorized us as a people. And the police do that to us daily. He says, they get away with it too. He says, you know what Douglas County attorney said, Don Klein? He said, if officer makes a mistake and he's wrong, but he had a reason to think he's right, well, then he's in the clear. He says, I can't get away with that. And he's like, if I shoot somebody and I say I thought he was going to do something, I'm going to go to jail. So the police are licensed to kill us, children and old people, he said. And Chambers said that if he owned a gun, he'd shoot it as a police officer, uses weapons against residents of Omaha. That guy got my vote, and I don't even live in Nebraska, I'll tell you right now. I just thought that was, you know, it's interesting to hear a senator coming out and saying something like that. Not concerned about ISIS, doesn't want to go overseas, got enough to deal with here with local law enforcement terrorizing citizens as it is. Pretty good stuff there. bad news for the IRS right now. Also, possibly good news for all of us out here, I'm not really sure, but the IRS commissioner, John Koshinen, he said Tuesday that his service at the agency has gotten so bad that they are ignoring more than 60% of taxpayers' phone calls during this tax season. He was speaking at the National Press Club, and he pleaded for more money, saying a budget boost would help the staff. Their overwhelmed customer service lines, he said they would help reverse staffing cuts in their compliance division, where he said that the government will lose $2 billion this year in money it would have otherwise been able to collect had they had adequate staffing. So Congress has cut or held the agency's funding static for several years now, with lawmakers deeming the agency recalcitrant in solving problems and unprepared for having targeted Tea Party groups for intrusive scrutiny. So again, no more money going to the IRS. They haven't had a budget increase. They're asking for like $1.6 billion, by the way. So while they're fleecing all of us, just can't seem to get enough money together in the coffers to get those phone lines manned. But again, 60% of the phone calls going to the IRS right now ahead of the, you know, we got 2 weeks until everybody's supposed to toe up to the line there and do their due diligence. But Nobody answering the phones there at the IRS right now. Not that they have any tax professionals working there. Anyway, I found that out when I called once asking some questions, trying to get to the bottom of our tax code. They advised me to go ahead and call a tax professional. I thought, man, that's unusual. You guys have 280,000 employees and not one tax professional among the lot. Just, mind blowing, isn't it? Okay. We also need to talk about Mr. President Barack Obama. He came out with a pretty substantial announcement yesterday. He announced yesterday that the United States will curb its greenhouse gas emissions up to 28% by 2025. This is a major step in the alleged fight against climate change. So America's Now pledge will serve as a key guidepost for other nations, and the White House hopes that its commitment will build momentum for the United Nations climate negotiations, which are set to be held in Paris later this year. Yes, I agree. Going back to our previous story here, defund the IRS. How about the fact that they are a private collection arm of the private Federal Reserve and really don't have any authority anyway? But, of course, I don't live in the District of Columbia, so not really subject to all these idiot laws anyway. Anyway, getting back to this whole thing. So yeah, Barack Obama basically coming out with a big decree now by executive order announcing this pledge to sign on with the United Nations plan to basically change, you know, the climate of the earth, and agreeing to a 28% decrease by 2025, which is only 10 years. So President Obama obviously increasingly acting to shore up a legacy on climate change, and a stringent Paris Climate Pact could play a key role in heading off the worst impacts of global warming and would bolster his green track record. So the pillar of the climate pledge rests on the administration's regulatory regime aimed at reining in the greenhouse gas emissions, including vehicle fuel efficiency standards and regulations to limit carbon pollution from power plants. But what it really means is that the EPA is going to get a whole bunch more money, and they're going to come out and they're going to take away your barbecue grills. That's really where the focus seems to be. It's going more and more micro. Remember, if you have a pond on your property, they've changed the definition of navigable waters. Doreen Hannes has gone over all of this with us. So navigable waters now could include a pond on your property, which falls under the EPA's Clean Water Act, which means they can come onto your property and they can inspect your pond for pollutants. What are pollutants now, according to this new policy by the EPA? Well, things like pollen, dirt, rocks. Literally, you can go look this up. These are absolutely some of the pollutants, biological things. Right, the stuff that nature's made out of. Right, all that stuff. You can't have that in your water on your property anymore. They're going to take your land from you. Anyway, I know Doreen Hannes is going to come on back on the show. So if you guys don't believe me, we'll make sure we plug her to fill us in on that gap when we get back to it. But I would also admit Deborah Tavares talks quite a bit about EPA regulations and these administrative decrees. And here we've got a pretty big one here right now staring us in the face, guys, looking at a 30% reduction in carbon in the next 10 years. I don't know how we're going to do it, and I can only imagine that it's going to be affecting all of us here down on the street level a lot more than it affects the big wigs in charge, looking at Halliburton and things. All the stuff that these guys have been doing for the last 60 years, holy cow, just absolutely crazy. Speaking of crazy, too, and kind of tying into this whole climate change agenda and some of the ancillary effects of it, there was a big power surge yesterday in Stockton in California, right? And it was caused by a gentleman running his truck into a utility pole. Not really an unusual story, right? Happens all the time. But in this particular situation, when this guy hit this utility pole, the top wire came down, hit the bottom wire, right? And that caused a major power surge. More than 5,000 homes lost power, right? And many, many, many of them, more than 1,000 of them, all of these people have PG&E smart meters on their homes, right? Many, many, many of them, more than 1,000 of the 5,000 that lost power, their smart meters exploded on the side of their homes. I'm not joking. Like, they actually exploded on the side of their homes, more than 1,000. They could hear it all over the neighborhoods after this truck ran into the pole. So if you need another reason not to have smart meters on your house, because, again, trucks run into poles all the time. And my utility meter on the back of my house, which is the old analog style, that's never exploded. Never happened since I've been here anyway. So again, 5,000 people lose their power because they all have these smart meters. And then a whole bunch of those smart meters, more than 1,000 of them, starting to explode. So again, PG&E coming out saying, oh, we don't know what we're going to do. We're going to try and fix this problem. But I would imagine there's going to be some lawsuits coming out about this. And again, boy, if you needed another reason to refuse smart meters, that would be a good one. Deborah Tavares talks about this all the time. RefuseSmartMeters.com or StopTheCrime.net. I think I don't have her stuff right in front of me right now, but to just look up Deborah Tavares smart meters, you will find out everything you want to know about how bad they are when they're not exploding on the side of your home. So this is kind of raising the level here to a whole nother bit of scary. Okay, let's move on to the economy right now, because there are some pretty big economic stories. We'll check out the markets here. The Dow currently down 100 points in early trading. We're at 17,672. Looks like the S&P also down just a little bit in early trading, 2049, so still above that 2000 mark. Dollar index taking a tiny bit of a dip today, about 0.25%, so we're still at 98.42 for the dollar index. The euro coming up just a touch today at 107.71. Gold back at the $1,200 mark. We're just a touch above it right now at 1201.80. Silver coming up today as well at $16.83 big pennies. Let's check out what the oil market is doing here right now. Still pretty flat below the $50 mark. It has risen about 3% today, but we're still sitting at 49.20. Hopefully Truth. Thank you, Truth. BDI is 596, down by 6 today, April 1st. I don't believe that is an April Fool's joke. And when I tell you Truth how much I appreciate you out there, that is not an April Fool's joke either. Coming through in the clutch. Love all you guys in the chat room. Just makes my day. So anyway, that's what's going on with the economy. Oh, you know what I totally forgot to look at, though? Let me reopen that. I dropped the ball. I do it sometimes. I totally dropped the ball. Got to go check Forex. And we got to see what the Bitcoin is doing. Bitcoin is at 239.31. Is Bitcoin going to come up in value? I don't know. Just speculating here right now, but let's just jump over into this other story here regarding a little country called Greece. I don't know if you guys have heard of that country, but they're having a little bit of a trouble economically right now, trying to play nice with the finance ministers there in Germany and as well as the EU. So this was an interesting story. This broke just this morning. Sources very close to Greece's finance minister told Greek reporters yesterday that Yanis Varoufakis, that's the Greece finance minister, he held a top secret meeting with high-ranking finance ministry officials to prepare them in case negotiations at the upcoming Eurogroup were not successful. The anonymous source noted that everybody in the room was staring at each other when Varoufakis, also a prominent blogger, he said the following: "We will go to Bitcoin. We will be ahead of the world economies, and although it may be painful in the beginning, Greece's economy will thrive in the long term." The Greek finance minister went on to explain about the cryptocurrency, how it could be implemented into the Greek's day-to-day life by using a special mini computerized chip with a card, and all citizens will carry the card as an electronic wallet. The card will be distributed for free to all Greek citizens via the local tax office, but it will also be available for purchase at the country's entry points for 45 euros or about 0.20 Bitcoin apiece. And the sale of the cards to tourists is expected to be another form of revenue for the cash-strapped Greece. He goes on to say, this is Varoufakis again, he says, "This is the smartest move to beat corruption and tax evasion. All transactions will be recorded by the Greek Ministry of Finance, new secure and dedicated Bitcoin servers, and will be able to track transactions at any given moment." Many officials objected, saying that Greece does not have the know-how to start such a global movement, but the Greek finance minister said he does have the know-how, and what the ancient Greeks were known for in this position is said, I'm sorry, I'm going to say that whole sentence again. He said that he does have the know-how, and that the ancient Greeks, what would they do in this position, he asked. He said, they would be the future. He says, as Greeks, we are innovators. Look at our history. He says, the first computer was used in Greece. He was speaking about the Antikythera device, which if you guys don't know about, you can go look it up. And I got to give him a point for being technically correct there. They did find the Antikythera device off of the coast of Greece. Probably the first mechanical computer ever on the planet. He also says the future starts in Greece and will be the first country to use the currency of the future, the currency that does not allow third parties to tell us what to do or how to live. This is the Greek thing to do, said the Greek minister. Earlier in the day, German finance minister Wolfgang Schäuble had made statements putting down once again Greece's negotiation efforts, and that this might have been the reason his Greek counterpart held this important meeting yesterday. He says, this is the way to be ahead. They want us to back up, and they say that we don't have a clue on what we do, but this is the solution for Greece's future. This is, again, Varoufakis, according to the same high-ranking finance ministry official who was present in the meeting. So Alexis Tsipras, the country's new prime minister, who is younger but not quite as digitally advanced as Varoufakis, was reluctant in the beginning, but Tsipras realized the advantages of such a move during a special session the Greek finance minister held for the Greek prime minister at Maximo's mansion during the weekend. The session was also attended by other leftist government members who needed to be prepared to lead the way in using Bitcoin when and if Greece decides to switch. So again, according to a source close to the Greek prime minister, the finance ministry is planning to hold free special seminars for Greek citizens, all of them, on how to use the Bitcoin. As of today, a forum on the Bitcoin and its use has been set up in Greek, and you can find that link if you go to redpillreports.com and go down to the bottom there. You'll check out the economic stuff. You'll be able to find this link. It's a Zero Hedge article there. But it's expected that the Greek economy will be running on euro and bitcoins simultaneously for at least a year until all citizens get familiar with the digital currency. And the next crucial step for Eurogroup, Greece's future should be held in the next couple of weeks. This is not an April Fool's joke. This is amazing. I don't even know how to say. I mean, of course, you know, everybody, we're going to freak out. Digital currency. Oh, my God. Global currency, whatever. But, you know, this is a solution. This is using technology to solve a problem. And it's going to get these guys out from under the thumb of the Troika. I just love it. I love it, love it, love it. And what is that going to do to the value of Bitcoin? I just think that's super duper cool. We've also been talking quite a bit about the AIIB. Well, over the weekend, it became official that the United States is going to be standing on its own when it comes to opposing the China-led Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. Really got to suppose it was only a matter of time, but news now that Japan, in fact, will seek membership in a matter of months will likely still come as somewhat of a surprise to Washington, given the otherwise tenuous relationship between the two countries and considering Japan's leadership role in the ADB, the Asian Development Bank. Nevertheless, the Japanese have apparently come to the same conclusions as Australia and South Korea and Britain and Italy and, I mean, the list just goes on and on. Simply not joining is just not an option, no matter how loudly the United States decides to protest. So again, more from FT. They say Japan is likely to join the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank within a few months, according to the country's ambassador to Beijing, a move that would see Tokyo break ranks with Washington and leave the U.S. as the only large holdout, which really isn't necessarily true because we already know that the IMF and the World Bank are both planning on being actively involved with the AIIB. So really, the United States is involved via proxy through the World Bank. They just don't want to come out and admit it yet. So really, in the end, money does indeed talk, and the possibility that the $50 billion venture may serve to shore up relations between Beijing and Tokyo has apparently proven sufficient enough to outweigh the quote-unquote concerns about the fund's lending standards. Of course, you know, has been noted on this radio show and on many other occasions, the only real concern about the bank revolve around the degree to which China uses the institution as an instrument of foreign policy, which is something Beijing has sought to play down even as it pushes for loans to be denominated in yuan. So the ball is now clearly in Washington's court in terms of adopting a stance towards the bank that strikes some sort of face-saving balance between caution and acceptance, which again is kind of what we're seeing now, the proxy getting the World Bank involved there. But again, meanwhile, while all this story was breaking, somebody in Washington apparently called somebody in Tokyo and indicated this by the following, which came out across the Bloomberg Monday morning ticker. Japan won't join the AAIB for the time being. That's according to the prime minister there in Japan. So somebody called somebody and said, you guys need to hold off on this and make it a little bit more rigorous. So that's apparently what Japan decided to do by releasing that statement saying, we're going to hold off for the time being. Time being really indicates just the next couple of months, which is kind of a bummer because it's going to cost them more. They're not going to be a founding member. They're only going to be a common member, you know, kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, much like South Korea in that same situation. Let's see. Do we want to go over this story? I don't know. Let's talk about, Visa did not get their payment system online in Russia. Today was their deadline to get that done. So Visa is going to have to pay a $60 million fine for the first quarter. MasterCard had a lot more success being switched over to the country's new SWIFT system there, but Visa is lagging behind right now. Visa not going to be leaving the country, even though they threatened to do so, should they be fined, but they're not going to do that. They still want to be heavily involved with Russia. So again, Visa is going to be paying a pretty large fine to Russia, and hopefully we'll get their act together and get the Visa cards working over there for the people. Peak gold is coming up also right now. The explored reserves of gold, diamonds, and zinc will be enough for 20 years of extraction, according to media reports citing Goldman Sachs research, which is, you know, put that in your pipe and smoke it, I guess. But the explored reserves of platinum, copper, and nickel will last for about 40 years, according to that same Goldman Sachs report. They say the combination of very low concentrations of metal in the Earth's crust and the very few high-quality remaining deposits means there are some things out there that are truly scarce. Again, this is one of the mining analysts from Goldman Sachs speaking to Zero Hedge. So I didn't realize that we were at the at a point where peak gold was actually something that could happen, but apparently that is something that could happen. So let's move away from the economy right now. I thought that story about Greece was just really, really, really impressive. We'll wait to see if they actually do move on that, but I think that would be a pretty big boost to the value of the Bitcoin if they decide to do that. Moving into the science and tech stuff right now, I want to talk a little bit about Amazon. Right now they're testing its drone delivery service at a very secret site in Canada following repeated warnings by the e-commerce giant that it would go out of the United States to bypass what it sees as the U.S. federal government's lethargic approach to new technology. The largest internet retailer in the world is keeping the location of its newest test site closely guarded, but what can be revealed is that the company's formidable team of roboticists, software engineers, aeronautics experts, and pioneers in remote sensing, including a former astronaut from NASA and the designer of the wingtip of the Boeing 787, are now operating in British Columbia. The end goal is to utilize what Amazon sees as a slice of virgin airspace, which is the slice of space between 200 feet and 500 feet where both most buildings end and where general aviation begins. Into that aerial slice, the company plans to pour highly autonomous drones of less than 55 pounds flying through corridors 10 miles or longer at about 50 miles an hour and carrying payloads of up to 5 pounds, which would account for about 86% of all of the company's packages. Amazon has acquired a plot of land lined by oak trees and firs where it is conducting frequent experimental flights with the full blessing of the Canadian government. As if to underline the significance of this move, the test site is barely 2,000 feet from the U.S. border, which is clearly visible from where the Guardian stood on a recent visit. The company's decision to set up camp in Canada after frustration in its attempts to persuade U.S. regulators to allow it to launch its drones in Washington state takes Amazon's quarrel with the federal government to a whole new level. Last week, a senior Amazon executive appeared before a U.S. Senate subcommittee and warned that there would be consequences if federal regulators continued to act as a drag on its ambitions to launch a drone delivery service called Prime Air. What Paul Misner, the company's vice president for global policy, did not tell senators was that at the very moment he appeared before them, Amazon drones were buzzing the skies just north of the border. The company wants to offer its customers the ability to have packages dropped on their doorstep by flying robots within 30 minutes of ordering goods online. With innovation in the drone sector reaching lightning speeds, Amazon said it was not prepared to curtail its ambitions because of what Misner said was a lack of impetus on the U.S. side of the border. Makes a lot of sense. So the architect and head of Prime Air said that the hope had always been to develop the drone service in the United States close to the company's Seattle headquarters. But we were limited there to flying indoors, he says, and we have been limited to that for a very, very long time. So we have to do what was necessary. We had to go to places where we could test it outside. And in this case, that means Canada. So drone technology is seen by many, many companies and aeronautic experts as the next frontier for innovation with billions of dollars potentially in the balance. And traditionally, the U.S. has been at the vanguard of both tech and aviation innovation. But the approach of the Federal Aviation Authority, a U.S. regulatory body, has been markedly tentative so far compared to that of regulators in Canada and Europe. A New York-based specialist in drone law said the Guardian's disclosure of Amazon's Canadian airstrip in exile should be a serious wake-up call to American politicians and regulators. The federal agency recently published its guideline for commercial use of small drones, and the new rules will take at least 2 years to come into effect. That was a delay that Amazon simply found unacceptable. And the federal body did agree last week amid considerable fanfare to award the company a so-called experimental airworthiness certificate. We covered this last Monday on the program. And that experimental airworthiness certificate can be used to test a specific model of drone, but it took so long for the certificate to become valid that by the time it was granted, Amazon said that that particular drone they wanted to test was obsolete. So the contrast between the relative rigidity of the FAA's approach to drone testing and the relatively relaxed regulatory regime in Canada is startling. Under the Canadian system, Amazon has been granted a virtual carte blanche regarding its entire fleet of drones within its designated airspace, having gone through a license process that took about 3 weeks. By comparison, it takes the FAA many, many months to grant approval. Sources familiar with the process told The Guardian that the U.S. regulators insist on an initial 23-page application, a review of 75 pages of further documentation, a four-hour presentation at FAA headquarters, followed by a three-hour site visit, together with ongoing reporting and record-keeping obligations. Early experiments in Canada focused on a range of individual drone capabilities, sensor that can detect and avoid obstacles in a drone path, link loss procedures that control the aircraft should be connected with its base. Sorry, I got a little phone call right there in the middle of the show and it kind of threw me off from my article. So anyway, they're testing this stuff in Canada because essentially we can't do it here, ladies and gentlemen. And the FAA's standards for what is necessary to approve Amazon doing something like this is absolutely insane compared to what Canada. And this is, what this reminds me of is the hemp industry in our country. You know, in Canada, the president of Canada, the prime minister of Canada, whatever they call it, actually goes and tours hemp production facilities, right? Hemp oil, hemp products, things like that. They do the same thing in China. Like, they actually support that industry. Here in the United States, when we tried to get into that industry, what happened? The DEA actually confiscated the seeds when Kentucky was trying to go through its initial, trial period with the hemp stuff. Confiscated the seeds. The state of Kentucky had to sue the DEA just to get access to seeds that it had already approved in the first place. So this is another industry that we're going to be behind the curve on. And this is a huge billion-dollar industry. They might as well outlaw 3D printing right now in the United States just to keep that, from getting a foothold here, because we certainly don't want to be able to compete with other industrialized nations around the world in anything. I'll tell you, I missed another story the other day since I just brought up the 3D printing that I thought was really, really cool. You'd have to go back and look through the news, though. But a dentist has now figured out a way to 3D print teeth in about 6 minutes. So instead of having to go in and getting a whole denture set done, right, they can actually 3D print one that's perfect for your mouth right on the spot. Whammo bammo. So again, 3D printing, man, I'm just so impressed with it. I just can't tell you guys enough. If I had $1 billion, that's where I would be putting my money right now. Okay, enough of my rambling today. We got to go to a quick 3-minute break, and when we come back, we will have a pair of authors on. Very, very excited about this show. Keep it right here, guys. We'll be right back. 3-minute break.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology. solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
The wicked ones, obviously under heavy Masonic influence.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. Special thanks to all of you guys hanging out in the chat room right now. I love having this open forum. If you guys have any questions or comments, please get them into the chat room at truthfrequencyradio.com, and I'll do my best to steward them across to our very special guests today. So we are moving into the second hour of the broadcast today, which is always the guest segment. And I got to be honest, ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be a very, very good show. I'm very, very excited to be bringing these two authors to the stage to talk about their newest book, which is called Confessions of a DC Madam. And I'm sure a lot of you out there probably are already familiar with that phrase, DC Madam. But I'm telling you right now, we're going to tell you a story that you have not heard yet today. And I'm very, very excited. Want to first highly, highly recommend this book, Confessions of a DC Madam. I got to finish it last night. It is absolutely a triumph. I'm sure if you guys were listening in the first hour, I kind of already went on a little rant about how much I like this book. But we're really talking about the politics of sex, lies, and blackmail, which is the subtitle of the book. And it's very fitting given all of the things that are coming out, being disclosed about, political elite, banking elite in the UK, in the US, and these two authors. Well, first of all, let me introduce Henry Vinson. He is the subject of the book. This is actually his life story that this book is talking about. Henry Vinson was born in 1960 in South Williamson, Kentucky, graduated from Williamson High School in 79, and after attending Southwest Virginia Community College, he enrolled in the Cincinnati College of Mortuary Science. In 1982, he was appointed for the coroner of Mingo County in West Virginia, and 4 years later, he became a funeral director for W.W. Chambers Funeral Home in Washington, D.C. After his stint at W.W. Chambers Funeral Home, he owned and operated the largest gay escort service ever uncovered in Washington, D.C. And he did all this, ladies and gentlemen, by the age of 26. I have to tell you, this is an amazing story, and the details that he goes into, especially in the beginning chapters about his life, are just detail rich. I got to give you guys an honest appraisal here. It's robust and it's very concise. Book is fantastic, and I commend Henry for having the courage to come out and tell this story to everybody, because again, this isn't a story that's been told very much. And also in 2007, Mr. Vinson received a master's in integrated marketing communications from West Virginia University, and today he's a successful entrepreneur and lives in Cincinnati, Ohio. He's also a licensed private pilot and flight instructor. Henry Vinson, thank you very much, sir, for joining us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. Absolutely, sir. And again, you know, this show might be challenging to some people. I think it's going to be rewarding for everyone, and I think that everyone will find it very interesting. I want to go ahead and also introduce our other author, the co-author of Confessions. His name is Nick Bryant. I'm sure a lot of you people out there have heard of him. He's a very successful investigative journalist. He's worked largely focuses on the plight of disadvantaged children in the United States, and his mainstream investigative journalism has been featured in articles within Gear, Playboy, Reader, and on Salon.com. He's also the author of The Franklin Scandal, a story of power brokers, child abuse, and betrayal, which is the first book to document the power elite pedophile ring here in the United States and also the cover-up of its heinous crimes. He is also the co-author of America's Children, The Triumph of Tragedy, Addressing the Medical and Developmental Problems of Lower Socioeconomic Children in America. Nick, thank you very much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today.
Well, I'm glad to be on the Red Pill.
Well, we're exceptionally excited to have you guys, and the door is always going to be open from here on out. I want to start today by going first to Henry, if that's okay with everybody out there. Henry, this is obviously a story that you've been waiting to tell for quite a long time. You kept it sort of quiet. Why did you decide now to come out and tell this story? And if you could kind of give us a little bit of the background and maybe tell us what you hope that the audience pulls away from this story, sir.
Well, I have two objectives for telling my story. First, I want to tell my side of the story because I've been subjected to a 25-year campaign of character assassination by the media. And second, I believe the American political system
Henry,
has become a wayward...
Henry, let me pause you right there. I'm gonna make a request. Can you do me a favor and disconnect? And I want you to call in on the call line at 866-37-TRUTH or 866-378-7884. Again, that's 866-378-7884. I want to bring you through to the board because your connection is just a little bit wonky, and I want to make sure we don't miss any of the things that you're saying. So if you could disconnect and call that number, were you able to get that written down, sir? Okay, I appreciate that. While we're waiting for Henry to come back on, sorry about the connection, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes it just gets a little goofy here. Let's go ahead and roll over to Nick. Nick, why was it that you decided to get involved with this project with Henry?
Well, I'd known about Henry's story for quite some time. When I wrote the Franklin scandal, the people that I was writing about in Washington, D.C., used Henry's escorts to compromise politicians.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm familiar with Henry's story. And I met Henry the first time, I don't know, about 11 years ago or so. And we've kept in touch over the years. And Henry finally decided to tell his story. Mm-hmm. I will let him explain why. But it sounded like an interesting book to write. And Henry has certainly lived a very interesting life. So I signed on to the project pretty much immediately.
Very nice. Okay, I think we do have Henry back on the phone line now. Henry, are you there, sir? Henry, can you hear me, brother? Okay, hang on a second here. We'll make sure. Henry, are you there, sir? Henry, can you hear me? Man, we are having just a little bit of a technical issue here. I think he's going to try and call right back in, and we'll try that one more time. Appreciate all the patience, everybody out there. I know sometimes that when we get on some of these subjects, it can get a little bit wonky in the internet world there. But Nick, since we still have you here, how much of this story? Obviously, your background is very inclusive in terms of some of this political blackmail. How much of that do you feel like is still going on today? I mean, is this, cause I gotta be honest, you know, I'm an avid watcher of House of Cards. And when I was reading this book, I thought, wow, this is like House of Cards to the nth degree. You know, we're like jumping into steroid mode here.
Well, I think House of Cards is actually quite a naive portrayal of the political system.
Okay.
I think that the most accurate part of House of Cards is that sociopaths are running the government.
Right.
But when it gets into, I think that there's a tremendous amount of blackmail that goes on, which House of Cards really doesn't touch on a little bit. Kingdoms, empires, syndicates, and unscrupulous groups have deployed political blackmail since time immemorial. And we have seen political blackmail, but it very seldom comes out. I mean, J. Edgar Hoover is a case in point. I mean, he blackmailed people for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And his blackmailing only emerged years after his death. I mean, Hoover's FBI recorded Martin Luther King having extramarital affairs and sent the recordings to King in an effort to blackmail him into committing suicide. And I think in 1960, political blackmail ultimately changed the trajectory of American politics. According to John F. Kennedy's secretary, Evelyn Lincoln, Hoover had the dirt on Kennedy's extramarital affairs and blackmailed him into accepting Lyndon in 1960. Kennedy originally wanted Stuart Symington of Missouri. So it's kind of interesting. Had Symington been, he would have become the president had Kennedy been assassinated, and which he was, and Lyndon Johnson would have stayed in the Senate. And totally different makeup in the 1960s, political makeup in the 1960s.
Right.
So, and recent whistleblower, Sybil Edmonds is one. She was a former translator with the FBI. And NSA whistleblowers Russell Tyson, Bill Binney have also come forward. And they, all three have said that their respective agencies collect petitions that can be used to blackmail them. And the media has reported on some of the information provided by Edmonds, Russell Tice, and Bill Binney. In fact, Tice was one of the sources of the New York Times articles in 2005 that reported on the NSA's Quickens. However, the mainstream media has refused to report on their allegations regarding the American politicians. So this is something that I think really plays an integral role in the political system, but it's been just categorically boycotted by the media.
It does seem to have been, doesn't it? Which is striking because the Americans seem as a whole to really, really like a sex scandal. This should be something that everybody out there wants to sink their teeth in, but I just wonder if it's just a little too out there right now, especially given all the pedophilia links that are going on and being disclosed in the UK. I want to jump over to the phones here. Hopefully, Henry is on the line. Henry, are you here, sir? Henry, can you hear me, brother? Man, I do not know what is going on. I can see him here in the phone line, but we're just not able to. Henry, can you hear me, brother? Well, let me see if I can get him back on the other line here. Give me just a second here, guys. I apologize for everything and appreciate all of the patience that everyone is showing in the chat room. Typically, Nick, we have a little bit more of our ducks in a row than we're getting right now, but we're going to see if we can get him on a different horn here and see if we can get him that way. Really just will be disappointed if I can't get you guys all together at the same time here because it's such an amazing story. Henry,
hello.
Hello. Oh, man, Henry, you sound great. Oh, thank gosh. Okay, let's jump back in. Henry, appreciate your patience with all this technological issue. If you want to go ahead and go back to that first question we asked you again, kind of what got you into deciding to get this story out now and what you hope the listeners take away or what you hope the readers take away from your book, sir.
Well, I have two reasons. I'd like to tell my side of the story because it's never been told, and I've been subjected to a 25-year campaign of character assassination by the media. But second, I believe the American political system has become a wayward aberration of the ideas it was built upon. And I believe that blackmail has played an integral role in hijacking our political system. And those are the two reasons that I wanted to write the book after all these years.
Mm-hmm. So really the hope then is that people really understand the depth of the blackmail and all of the depravity that's actually going on in Washington and how that really has an effect on policy setting and what's actually going on in terms of everything?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think another thing that struck me about this book is, you know, when I first got it, obviously the title, Confessions of a D.C. Madam, I immediately thought about, what was her name, Deborah Palfy? And,
yes, Deborah Palfy.
Yeah, so I thought it was unusual that, in the book you kind of compare, her, who was also dubbed the DC Madam back in 2008, to yourself. I wonder if you want to kind of go through some of the similarities or differences and what makes your story a little bit more unique and kind of just go into a little bit of the background of your story, if you would, sir.
Sure. And we both ran escort services in Washington, DC, and both of us were dubbed DC Madam by the press. And the federal government subjected both Ms. Palfrey and me to a crucible that was designed to ensure our silence or ultimately crush us. Ms. Palfrey was merely running an escort service when the Justice Department smacked her with a 14-count RICO indictment, and I was walloped with a 43-count RICO indictment, so I was potentially staring at 295 years behind bars. But I do many other things other than run an escort service. I've been a funeral director, have a degree in mortuary science.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a commercial pilot, and I've gone back to school and gotten a master's degree in integrated marketing. But Ms. Palfrey, she seems to have become a bit overwhelmed by the Justice Department's effort to destroy her, and she was unwilling or unable to cope with the government fleecing her of all of her money and status and depositing her in federal prison.
Mm-hmm. I got to ask then, what do you think the difference was in the level of prosecution between you two? Or I guess more poignantly, do you feel like your sexual orientation played into the disparity in some way?
Yes, I do. I think my sexual orientation played a big role in it. Because I ran a gay escort service during the Reagan and Bush One administration.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the politicians and power brokers that I provided with escorts were closeted Republicans. And it would have been a death knell to their careers if it came out that they were soliciting gay escorts.
Right. So do you really feel like then that the fact that you were supplying, you know, males to other males was, instead of female escorts, was somehow a factor in this prolonged attack against you?
I do. I think that played a role in it. I think it did. This was a long time ago when things were much different. And I think the politicians using a gay escort service, it would have been a just destroy their careers.
Mm-hmm. Nick, what do you think? Do you think was it much more frightening for Henry to try and tell this story 10 years ago than it would be today? And what do you think about the transition going on in Washington right now in terms of seeing some of these things coming to light?
Well, I think if you're a conservative Republican and you're in the closet, you have to remain in the closet, or else I think that's still the end of your career. There have been some politicians that have come out. I mean, Barney Frank is one, and actually he was a client of Henry's escort service. But I think for the most part, the political climate hasn't changed that much where certainly if you're a Republican and you're gay, I mean, that's the end of your career.
Right.
And I think for many Democrats, that can also be said. But if you're a Democrat and you're found having an extramarital affair, that could also be the end of your career. I think that Elliot Spitzer is a case in point of that. Bill Clinton obviously skated from
clearly
the Monica thing, but barely. And our politicians have a potent alchemy of arrogance, power, and lust, which easily translates into extramarital affairs and in some cases illicit sexual encounters. And as long as we keep electing these type of alpha males who are a bit sociopathic or full-blown sociopathic to government, this is going to be a perpetual thing. And as I said earlier, political blackmail isn't new. I mean, kingdoms and syndicates and unscrupulous groups have been using political blackmail since time immemorial. So uh-huh. This is not a new phenomenon.
Well, yeah, and I agree with that for sure. I wonder if you could, Nick, maybe break down for the audience a little bit about how Henry's escort service was kind of involved in the blackmailing aspect of Washington, kind of how the actual fundamentals worked in the system, if you would.
Well, Henry provided escorts to a D.C. power broker named Craig Spence. And Craig Spence had a house that was wired for audiovisual blackmail. Craig spent up to $20,000 a month on escorts from Henry's escort service.
Wow.
So he would have wild parties and orgies, but then he'd also have like straight political parties. And whatever you did, I mean, Henry had the misfortune of finding himself being blackmailed by Craig Spence because of what he said about his escort service. And he can talk about that. But a lot of times Spence would just have like Washington DC cocktail parties where people would be invited and you would have senators and congressmen and people from the Reagan administration or the Bush administration and people in business, lobbyists, it would just be like a kind of a routine Washington DC cocktail party. And then at maybe 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock, something sexually inappropriate would happen, or maybe someone would break out some cocaine and people that didn't want any part of that would split. But people that wanted to party with what Spence would offer, and he offered everything, would stick around, and they'd be lubricated on alcohol, which would lower their inhibitions, and they would ultimately be compromised. So that's how the nuts and bolts of this compromise operation went. And Craig Spence was a CIA asset, and he was also being protected by the Secret Service, too.
Well, and there's the big crux because, you know, I've read a lot about that that says basically that everybody in any position of power anywhere, be it economic, be it political, even out in, you know, the Hollywood scene, all of those people are compromised in some way. Somebody is holding something above your head or their head. Do you find that that's pretty accurate in your, research, Nick?
Yes, I think that, well, when you get into Washington, D.C., I think that if you can be blackmailed or compromised, you most certainly are.
Right.
Henry was really aware that not only was Spence compromising people, but that network that Spence was part of was aware of who Henry was sending escorts to. So you didn't necessarily have to be at a party at Spence's home to be compromised. You could just get an escort from Henry, and that network that was compromising people would know that you had inclinations for gay escorts.
Nice.
And at that point, you would be susceptible to being compromised.
My goodness.
So, and as I said earlier, this is something that has gone on and for decades. So this isn't anything new. I think it's been refined, and with today's technology, it's probably much easier to blackmail people than it was in previous years.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that also. It seems like they've just gotten more efficient at their blackmail and with all of this type of stuff. Henry, I want to bounce back to you just because, Nick touched on this idea of your, you know, kind of unraveling relationship with Mr. Spence and him initially or eventually deciding to try and blackmail you. I don't want to, you know, put you out into a skinny branch or make you give away anything from the book that you don't want to give, but I wonder if you could touch on what it was that happened between you and Spence and how that relationship went so sour.
Well, Craig was a D.C. power broker and a CIA asset. His upscale D.C. home was bugged for audiovisual blackmail. This is a man so powerful, he even arranged midnight tours of the White House for some of the escorts who I employed. And Spence would have these lavish parties, and it would look like who's who of Washington, D.C. There would be power brokers there, media people, people of the Bush administration. And Craig was continuously pressuring me to provide him with children. And that was something that I never, ever gave into, and I just made it very clear that I didn't want any part of that. And I went over to Spence's house one day at his request, and after he had pressured me a number of times to provide him with children, which I refused, I decided to quit dealing with him altogether.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, he sent one of his people named Tony and two of his thugs over to pay me a late-night visit, and they discharged guns outside my window, busted up my apartment, threatened to kill me if I didn't continue to provide escorts to Spence. And although I did continue to provide escorts with him, he never again requested that I provide him with children. So it was over children is why our relationship went sour.
Right. Do you feel like he was kind of the mastermind of your downfall after that event, though?
Well, I don't think he was the mastermind of my downfall, but the very fact that I became enmeshed with Spence ultimately led to my downfall. I was privy to Spence's blackmail enterprise, his collusion with the Secret Service, and his pandering of children to his power broker cronies. So I ultimately became the man who knew too much.
Right.
The shadowy network that protected Spence was affiliated with the highest levels of the government, and I just became a major liability.
Wow. You know, I got to be honest, too. One of the other names that popped out in your book when I was reading it that was really surprising to me was the fact that initially when you were charged, your defense attorney was Greta Van Susteren. That really threw me for a loop. Obviously, she's not doing case trial anymore. But just wondering, you know, if you want to go into your relationship with her and why she did not seem to last as your defense attorney for very long, sir.
Well, I was very disappointed with the way Greta Van Susteren represented me. The government accomplished its two objectives when she was my attorney, my silence and imprisonment. And at the onset of my case, she seemed very committed to a vigorous defense on my behalf, and she even filed an 11-page motion to mandate the release of my clientele list that the government had previously seized from me.
Mm-hmm.
Greta argued that the names of my patrons should be released, because if the government's assertion was accurate, and my escort service was in actuality a prostitution ring, and my clients aided and abetted a criminal enterprise.
That's right.
But the U.S. attorney for D.C. vehemently contested Greta's motion with a rather disingenuous argument. He concluded that the names of my patrons shouldn't be made public because the U.S. attorney's office fears the intimidation of government witnesses due to the embarrassing nature of the case. And my trial judge, Harold Green, sided with the prosecution, and he barred the public disclosure of my clientele list. And after my judge acquiesced to the U.S. attorney's office, Greta started to change her tune, and she urged me to take the government's plea bargain. I ultimately did enter into a plea agreement with the government, and the government promised leniency if I cooperated. And after my arrest, I spent days being debriefed by government officials, and I told them everything I had witnessed, which was very incriminating, and Greta unbelievably didn't attend any of those debriefings where I was incriminating myself. I look back at that, and I find that mind-boggling, but that is, I was very disappointed with Greta.
Well, yeah, I mean, you would have to be at that point. What really bothers me about that is that you were basically brought up on RICO charges, which essentially means that everybody who's ever been affiliated with the case should have been charged. And the fact that they basically hid all of your clients really flies in the face of justice. I mean, I don't know how else to put it.
Well, it does. And a very corrupt grand jury was ultimately engineered by the U.S. attorney for Washington, D.C. to exonerate Spence and hammer me with a 43-count RICO indictment. So I was looking at 295 years in prison.
295 years in prison for really essentially not much.
Well, I think that the government wanted to make sure that Henry would keep his mouth shut.
Right.
So they gave him an alternative. They said, Henry, if you talk, we're going to put you away for the rest of your life. If you remain mute, we'll give you 5 years. I mean, that was kind of the deal that was given to him.
Boy, though, the rest of your life and the rest of a whole bunch of other people's lives, too. 295 years is unbelievable. We've got to go to a three-minute break. You guys, I hope you guys are listening, are enjoying this broadcast. I really find this subject to be absolutely fascinating. And again, I cannot recommend Confessions of a DC Madam highly enough. You can get it on Amazon and I believe at Barnes and Noble's as well. We're going to go to this 3-minute break. When we come back, we will still have Henry Vinson and Nick Bryant on the show and plenty more questions. Keep it right here, guys, wherever you're at. Keep it right here. We'll be right back, guys. 3 minutes.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your co-workers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sil, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sil?
He's part of the family now, T.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him right here on Freedom Link, Monday through Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the iodine now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a 1-year supply.
Your future looks really great.
I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the Microplant Powder family. Microplant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at hempusa.org.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
The Kev Baker Show.
Monday through Friday. Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys very much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. And thank you guys all for hanging out in the chat room. We really love having you guys in there right now. We're moving into the second segment of our second hour today, or the final segment, with our very special guests. Henry Vincent and Nick Bryant have joined us. They're talking about their newest book, Confessions of a DC Madam. And this is a story I don't think that's gotten a lot of play out there, and I really appreciate them, having the courage to write this book and get this information out, and also having the courage to come on to the radio program and talk about it. I want to run over to Nick here really quick. Nick, we kind of talked about this just a little bit in the very beginning when we were having some tech issues, but the American public really does seem to love our sex scandals, especially when they involve really famous people. But my question is, how much do you think we actually know about what is going on? Or to put it another way, in your experience, you know, how much is actually being kept secret by this shadowy underworld of the elite?
Well, I think that the vast majority of the perverse predilections of our elite are unknown to the American public, especially in Washington, D.C. And there's a good reason for that. In Washington, D.C., the federal government has a greater dexterity to cover up scandals and crimes that lend themselves to blackmail due to the fact that the Capitol's law enforcement is exclusively controlled by various branches of the federal government. The U.S. attorney for D.C. who prosecutes all D.C. crimes is appointed by the president. And the FBI and Secret Service are also minions of the executive branch, and Congress controls the budget of D.C.'s Metropolitan Police. So basically, the federal government controls all of the law enforcement and judiciary that's in Washington, D.C., and they can easily quash cases that should be prosecuted. I mean, and that happens time and time again, or over-prosecute cases to keep people quiet, like what happened with Henry and most likely with Deborah Jean Palfrey.
Right.
So, and I think... Larry Craig is really a fitting example of that. Larry Craig was in Washington, D.C. for 30 years, first as a congressman and then as a senator. And he actually procured escorts through Henry's escort service. And he was unscathed. I mean, what's really telling is he was at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, and he was trying to pick guys up in a restroom at the airport. And he had engaged in behavior like this that should have gotten him outed over the 30 years that he was in Washington, D.C. innumerable times.
Right.
And he skated on all of that. And it's he was a conservative Republican, as we were talking about earlier. I mean, if he had been caught doing this, it would have been like just a complete death knell to his career.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of in belief that Craig's brazen exploits, regardless to his homosexuality, is the fact that he was compromised and he was mindful that his brazen exploits would be covered up. And I think it's only when he strayed out of his protective net and tried to pick up a guy in a restroom in an airport in Minnesota that he finally got busted. But there's been multiple accounts of Larry Craig picking up guys throughout his 30-year tenure in Washington, D.C.
Wow. I'm trying to figure out just exactly how prevalent we all feel like the co-opting of American, you know, politics really is in the world. It sounds like you guys both think that it's pretty prevalent. Let me go to Henry really quick, maybe for an answer to that question. Henry, how prevalent in your experience do you feel like blackmail actually is on the political scene these days?
Well, I think blackmail plays a much bigger part than we all know. Now, kingdoms, empires, syndicates, and unscrupulous groups have deployed political blackmail since the time began. And in my experience, blackmail plays an integral role in the American political process. But blackmailers and their blackmail targets would never divulge such misconduct for the obvious reasons. Blackmailers would be subjected to criminal prosecution, and their blackmail targets would be subjected to either prosecution or persecution for that conduct. So political blackmail is almost never made public, and if it is, it's usually years after the fact. Just look at J. Edgar Hoover, for example. He blackmailed people for decades, and his blackmailing only emerged years after his death.
Right.
And according to John Kennedy's secretary, Evelyn Kennedy, Hoover had the dirt on Kennedy's extramarital affairs and blackmailed him into accepting Lyndon Johnson as his running mate in 1960. And Hoover never publicly divulged that he was a blackmail artist. And both Martin Luther King and John Kennedy never divulged that they had been targeted by Hoover for blackmail. So, and several accounts have since emerged that the mafia was blackmailing J. Edgar Hoover because he was a homosexual, which is one of the reasons why Hoover said the mafia didn't exist until there was overwhelming evidence of its existence. So there's a precedent for blackmail in relatively recent U.S. history.
So, Nick, do you agree with that? Is this the rule and not the exception to the rule in terms of the way politics is played in Washington?
Well, the thing about it is we generally, with blackmail, we generally get a post-mortem on it. It's something that never happens in real time.
Right.
And slices of it come out, like J. Edgar Hoover's blackmailing the people. There was George White who was blackmailing people, although he wasn't with the FBI, and he was blackmailing people in New York and also in San Francisco. And then you've got Henry's story that's come out about blackmailing people. And then, as I said earlier, you've got Sybil Edmonds, Russell Tice, and Bill Binney, the government whistleblowers who have potentially talked about blackmail. But blackmail isn't something that the media pursues. And I think for good reason, and throughout my sojourn into this really sordid realm, I've come across a number of very powerful people in the media who were potentially blackmailed. So I think that you have to blackmail people in the media as well as government, because the Fourth Estate is the watchdog of government. And if you don't have people in the Fourth Estate blackmailed, then the government, then you're not going to be able to control the system.
Henry, are you there, sir? I'm sorry. I think my microphone has been shorting out here just a second. Henry, I wanted to hop on that point that that Nick had just made and ask you if you had ever actually actively provided escorts for anyone in the media, if you don't mind answering that question.
Well, Craig Spence had parties that were like a who's who of anyone important. There were certainly media people there at his parties, and he did supply escorts to Craig Spence. So the answer to that would be yes.
Wow. Man, this is just amazing. And Henry, and in following up with your story, obviously, you know, running a gay escort service, obviously people have some visuals that come to mind. You were obviously exposed to a lot of different scenes, potentially heavy drug use, orgies, you know, some other unmentionable type stuff. But I wonder if, I think the listeners might be interested in wondering or learning what were some of the more intense things that you actually witnessed while you were, you know, running this escort service?
Well, I think the worst thing that I was exposed to was the children, was the fact that Craig Spence and Larry King were running this pedophile network. And that was the worst thing that I had ever been exposed to, was that. And, of course, Nick has done another book about that, mm-hmm. the Franklin scandal, where he spent years researching that subject.
I mean, are children really kind of the the unspoken thing here? I mean, going back to Nick, how prevalent, I guess, are the children aspect in all of these, you know, all of these escort rings and pedophilia rings or elite rings, what do you want to call it? How much should attention should we be paying to the children right now?
Well, I think child trafficking is starting to become more and more part of American consciousness, starting to break into the zeitgeist, but mm-hmm. people are still looking at it from 10,000 feet. We don't really understand how child trafficking works. Interstate child traffickers generally don't get busted. Child porn is a huge industry, and very few people get busted doing that, too. There was a news article in the news a couple of years ago. There were a number of people in the Pentagon and national security apparatus who were downloading child pornography on their work computers, and most of them walked. There was like 200 in all, and most of them walked. So I think that right now we have the Jeffrey Epstein case, where Jeffrey Epstein was flying underage girls around mm-hmm. and providing them to his power broker cronies, and all those guys walked. The women that provided Epstein with little girls walked. Epstein had to do 13 months in a county jail, and all the power brokers that he provided with underage girls walked too. So this is something that needs to be looked at. I think pedophilia exists in all social strata, but I think people in the upper social strata tend to molest children with impunity.
Right. You know, I'm always struck by the fact that it seems like every day there's another crisis. There's some other thing that's going on. And I guess I'm beginning to wonder if there's anybody in any kind of position of power anywhere that could do anything about this. It seems like Eric Holder is the most inept AG since, you know, in the history of justice. And I just wonder, Nick, about your opinion on lack of prosecution across the board when it comes to just any of these types of scandals. It doesn't seem like anything is getting done, from Fast and Furious all the way up through the pedophile stuff. It just seems like nobody cares anymore.
Well, this is a disease that's in our country. Our country is suffering from this disease. And to cure a disease, it has to be diagnosed. And the mainstream media has been unwilling to diagnose the disease. I think if Americans were given better information, that they would react. I think the Penn State scandal is a case in point.
Oh, huge, yeah.
Where Americans were given information and they reacted. But unfortunately, Americans aren't given the information that they need to really make cogent decisions at this point. And
right. And
I think a function of that is 90% of the media that Americans imbibe are owned by five corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And those five corporations exist because the government allows them to exist and doesn't come after them with antitrust suits. So ultimately, as long as we have the government and the media working in collusion, Americans are going to be in the dark. But I think if Americans truly had this information put in front of them, that they would want to do something about it.
I mean, that's my opinion.
Well, I would hope so. I mean, golly, if we could get our handle on the media and actually get some quality information to come out, people could actually start making some cogent decisions. I can't imagine which way we'd the wind would start blowing in this country, but I wonder if we're ever going to see that, especially given all of the crises that we seem to be surrounded by all the time. I want to jump back into the story with Henry here for just a second. Henry, obviously, you know, one of the big outcomes from this whole debacle was that you got to spend some time in a wonderful federal facility for almost 5 years. I personally cannot imagine what kind of effect that would have on me, but I wonder if you're comfortable talking about that, maybe talk a little bit about what that experience was like actually being incarcerated for that long.
Well, the prison industrial complex, it reduces you to a state that's less than human, and I certainly felt less than human while I was imprisoned.
Mm-hmm.
But the government strips you of your possessions and status in society and reduces you to a name and a number. You're provided with three hots and a cot. And you learn not to voice your opinion, keep your head down, and sort of fade into the woodwork. The federal prison system's little more than a federal jobs program, and there are few chances for meaningful self-improvement. But in many cases, especially for nonviolent drug offenders, it's a huge waste of taxpayers' money.
Yes.
But while I was in prison, I made up my mind that I would never be in this situation again, and I feel that education's the key. So after that, I went back to school, and I got a master's degree in integrated marketing from West Virginia University. And I think if the government offered inmates an education, there would be more success stories like mine.
Do you think that that was part of what empowered you to become a success later in life? I mean, obviously you're a pilot and a pilot instructor and, you know, obviously a very successful, well-spoken person. Do you feel like that experience in prison kind of set you on the right track, so to speak?
Well, I was actually a commercial pilot. I was all of these things prior to that.
Oh.
But it's certainly, I guess, Friedrich Nietzsche, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. That quote is near and dear to my heart because I've endured a number of tragedies in my life, and I was determined not to let them destroy me. And they galvanized my will and spurred me to reach for success. But Nietzsche should have said, what doesn't kill you often hurts like hell. And I think living a good life is the best revenge, and I've managed to forge a wonderful life for myself despite repeated persecution by the government and the media.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, the book is a triumph, so I can only see you becoming more successful as this goes out. And again, I want to commend your courage for coming out and telling this story. I wonder, though, you know, I don't want you to give away the farm here, because I do want people to go out and purchase this book. I do highly, highly recommend it, ladies and gentlemen. This has been a book that I went through in literally about 2 hours cover to cover last night, and it was riveting, the whole thing cover to cover. But I wonder, you do actually name some names in the book, Henry, and I, you know, without giving away the farm, would you be comfortable kind of talking about maybe some of your potential clients? People in the chat room are dying to have your client list, by the way.
Well, I'm comfortable naming names after the fact because I ran an escort service when the Reagan and Bush 1 administrations were in office. And under Reagan, no gay civil rights legislation was passed. Indeed, Reagan once declared that homosexuals were sick. But the greatest transgression of Reagan was against the gay community is silence about the AIDS epidemic spreading in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Although AIDS was first identified in 81, Reagan didn't mention it publicly until 85. And I think if he had, thousands of lives could have been saved. But my most well-known client was William Casey because he was the head of the CIA.
I got to pause you right there. You said your most well-known client was William Casey, head of the CIA.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, please continue.
But I did provide escorts to other prominent congressmen like Larry Craig and Barney Frank. But William Casey, he came to my attention because he had a rather unusual ritual. He liked escorts to ritualistically anoint him in oils, and he also had erectile dysfunction. So the escorts found that rather perplexing. But other people, such as Donald Gregg, who was the U.S. ambassador to South Korea during Bush's presidency, Charles Dutcher, associate director of presidential personnel in the Reagan administration, Paul Balick, labor secretary, Elizabeth Dole's political personnel liaison. He was a very close friend of mine and a client.
Mm-hmm.
And Larry Craig. Larry Craig's a great example of the hypocrisy of the closeted Republicans.
Wow. Now, did you get in touch with all of these people through Craig Spence?
No, I met a lot of these people. They were just clients of the service. They called me directly.
Oh, right. Okay. Wow. But I got it. I'm still totally flabbergasted at the William Casey thing, and especially getting into the ritualistic aspect. I mean, that is frightening stuff, because that tells me someplace there's probably a video of him engaging in that activity out there, you know?
Well, Craig's house was set up for blackmail, so almost anything that went on in his house was videotaped and audiotaped.
Wow, just unbelievable. I really, again, I got to commend you guys for coming out and having the guts to come out and tell. Have you ever been concerned for your life, Henry? I mean, have you been threatened or anything like that?
Well, I have been threatened, and as I shared earlier, the biggest threat that I had was when I would refuse to pander to have children for Craig Spence.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent over one of his people named Tony and two of his thugs, and they paid me a late night visit. So they threatened to kill me. I do think that's the biggest threat that I had.
Okay, but nothing since the book has come out? You haven't had a whole bunch of people coming and giving you the late night phone calls and stuff?
Well, I've tried to keep a very low profile since all this happened, and since the book came out, no, I haven't.
Well, that's good. We're going to continue to pray for your safety then again, because this takes a lot of guts coming out with something like this, and especially naming names like you just did on the air. That's absolutely amazing. I want to hop over. We've only got maybe 5 minutes or so left, so I want to kind of open up the floor to Nick. Do you have anything, Nick, closing words of advice or maybe some efforts that we could put forth trying to kind of break some more of these stories or see if we can bring this stuff to some kind of resolution, sir?
Well, as I said earlier, there's a disease in our society, and the ideals that America was built upon are eroding because of this disease.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to Americans to edify themselves about this disease, because only after we have a diagnosis can we have treatment. And Henry's book is a very good book on, it's a good primer on one of the ways in which our democracy has gotten away from Americans. I mean, people generally have a tendency to think that it's PAC money that is responsible for our democracy getting away from the people. And I think PAC money does play an integral role. And money under the table plays an integral role. But
right.
I think sexual blackmail plays just as an important role as money. And until Americans really understand that, and until Americans really understand that Washington, D.C. isn't that far removed from Babylon as far as the predilections of our power elite, until Americans really understand that, we're not going to have a functioning democracy.
Right. Okay, and then... Henry, my big question right now that I've got is what's next for you, and how can we support you in getting this message out? What can we do for you here, sir, and websites, things like that? What can we do to help support you?
Well, I think what you're doing now is great, inviting us on the show. I really appreciate that. It really helps a lot. And I think you're doing a lot. Just keep up the great work of spreading the word.
Well, we're going to do what we can. I mean, that's kind of the name of the game here at the Red Pill Reports is, you know, every day we try and break down all of the different facets of the matrix, all of the different agencies and agendas that are trying to control all of our lives. And it gets overwhelming sometimes because, again, like we were talking about earlier, there doesn't ever seem to be a shortage of a crisis going on. There's always somebody doing something someplace. And sometimes you have to have these sort of uncomfortable conversations so that you can properly identify who the adversaries are, because if we all run around thinking that the television is telling us the truth, the chances of us actually being able to come together and any kind of meaningful way is obviously going to be compromised. So again, I just really want to highly recommend listeners out there, go and please purchase this book, Confessions of a DC Madam. This is a story that I don't feel has been told and certainly needs to be told a lot more. I want to thank you both for being here today. Henry, again, just want to thank you for having the courage to write this book and to have the courage to come out and actually name some names. Absolutely groundbreaking stuff. Thank you very much for being here today, Henry.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
I'm glad. And again, if you decide to write another book, the door will be wide open for you. And if any developments happen, if you get anything that you'd like to come back and share with us, the door will be open. Same goes for you, Mr. Nick Bryant. Really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to come and talk to us about your great book today. I hope you guys enjoyed yourselves, and just want to thank you as well, Nick, for taking some time out to be here today.
Well, thanks for having us on the show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are just about out of time. I really hope you guys enjoyed that discussion. I'm telling you, you know, as we find out more and more about the way that Washington actually works, I just get more and more frightened. And I'm honestly starting to look for a place to live in like Panama or Costa Rica or something, because it just seems like with everything that's going on right now, I don't know, all bets are kind of getting off at this point. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed that discussion. I really do highly recommend Confessions of a DC Madam. If you guys want to go find it on Amazon, that would be awesome. And I would definitely appreciate the support for those two guys there. Just getting back on track here for tomorrow, want to let you know that Servando Gonzalez will be joining us. He's the gentleman who called me a little while ago while I was on air, so I didn't get an opportunity to speak with him yet. But he is a very, very unique individual who is Cuban-born. He's a writer here in America, a historian, and also an intelligence analyst. He's written many, many books and essays and articles about Latin American history and intelligence, espionage, semiotics, things like that. I imagine he will be one of those guys that got a good chuckle out of Jen Psaki's proclamation the other day about our long-standing policy of non-intervention in Central and South America. I about fell out of my desk when I heard her say that. So anyway, Servando Gonzalez will be on tomorrow. We'll be talking about the Council of Foreign Relations and also our long-standing policy of non-intervention in Central and South America. And of course, Xavian Hayes will be joining us on Friday. Definitely looking forward to talking about his newest book, Aliens in Ancient Egypt. We tried to have him on a couple of weeks ago and we had some bad connections, but I have it on good authority now. I've written some letters to the NSA and they are going to let us have this phone call on Friday. So do stick around for that. Definitely looking forward to that. Appreciate you guys all hanging out with us throughout the entire show. We are just about out of time. I do want to highly recommend people check out Roger Sales' show next. Hopefully he will be not having any technical issues as well, so he will be able to get through a live program today. Roger Sales, one of my good friends down in Argentina, talking about sovereignty, about our true place in the world as a republic in this country as opposed to the citizenship or the residence that they would like us all to believe that we are. So anyway, his show comes up live. It is Monday through Friday right after mine here on Truth Frequency, and I definitely recommend you guys check that out. Again, want to give a little bit of props to Kevin, because I do believe Kevin is going to have James Perloff on tonight, one of my very favorite guests, one of the best authors out there, and certainly one of the foremost authorities on false flags and things like that. So definitely stick around this afternoon. I will see you guys in the chat room then. And I'm looking forward to the remaining shows this week, as well as being on the Wuku Friday night. You guys all take care out there. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us through this 2 hours. Everybody be good, be safe, and keep your head on a swivel, and do not let the man get you down. We will see you guys bright and early in the morning. Take care, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.